with blue satin sashes, wild brown girls tied up in warm strings, wild, wild white girls that melt into nose cream. These are a few of my favorite things.
Is proud to co-sponsor the Creative Music Guild's third annual Improvisation Summit of Portland. This year's Improvisation Summit brings together creative and adventurous musicians, dancers, and improvisers for a weekend of diverse and unique performances. Featured artists include Tim Byrne, Bad Luck, Scott Kutchell, The Rich Halley Quartet, Ken Allison Senses Sharpened, Michael Sterling, Doug Terrio, Matt Carlson, John Gross, and many more. The third annual Improvisation Summit takes place June 6th and 7th at Sandbox Studios, located at 420 Northeast 9th in Portland. Additionally, the Creative Music Guild will screen the film Reach of Resonance on June 5th at the Portland Art Museum's Witzel Auditorium. For more information and tickets, go to creativemusicguild.org.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Tryon Life Community Farms Bloom Festival on Sunday, June 8th from 2 until 10 p.m. Bloom Festival is filled with live music, activities, local organic food, and performances at the TLC Farm next to the Tryon Creek State Forest, featuring live music by Soul Nectar, Selkies and Cedars, The Dirty Dandelions, Serotone, DJ Carola Mariachi, and many others. There'll be special entertainment by Clowns Not Bombs, performing in the circus act Spaghetti Western. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Again, that's Sunday, June 8th from 2 until 10 p.m. at the Tryon Life Community Farm.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:02 a.m. Coming up at 9, it's APA Compass with award-winning author Chang Ray Lee describing his Asian American heaven and his latest novel, On Such a Full Sea. And Marivi Sullivan explores the Filipina immigrant experience in her novel, The Mango Bride. That and lots more coming up on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program, with your hosts Sarika Mehta and Andrew Ye. On today's program, we feature interviews with two authors. We have Marivi Sullivan, who explores the Filipina immigrant experience in her novel Mango Bride, and Professor Chang Ray Lee, who talks about celebrity chefs, his Asian American heaven, and his latest novel, On Such a Full Sea. Thanks for listening to APA Compass. My name is Andrew Ye, and today we're speaking with acclaimed author Chang Ray Lee. Lee's first novel, Native Speaker, won the Penn Hemingway Award, the American Book Award, and the ALA Book of the Year Award. And his next three novels also won multiple awards. He's with us today to talk about his latest novel, On Such a Full Sea, which is set in a future declining America and tells the story of Fan, a Chinese-American laborer who sets out on a quest to find her missing lover. Chang Ray, welcome to APA Compass.
Nice to be here.
Chang Ray, the setting of On a Full Sea is a version of a future America which includes self-contained labor settlements inhabited by Chinese-Americans who produce food for the wealthy, predominantly Caucasians, who live in walled corporate enclaves. And outside the labor settlements and walled villages is the violent, lawless wilderness. Now, the future seems to take some of our current problems, like the wealth gap and race issues, and magnify them to make a point.
Yeah, well, definitely. You know, any speculative fiction is really an expression of current anxieties, right, and concerns. And yeah, one of, you know, I have a set of things that I've, you know, wanted to talk about it in this book, income inequality for one, and also, you know, in terms of Fan's community, that they're all descended from Chinese immigrants, you know, a kind of examination of a Confucian kind of society inside an American context. And then of course also looking at these Asians as laborers in you know the larger context.
Was there anything particular that was your inspiration for choosing these topics?
Well, yeah, I was originally going to write a novel about China and laborers in China, factory workers in outside of Shenzhen, but set in contemporary times and really thinking about, you know, their issues, their struggles, the kinds of things that were going on in the Chinese industrial life. But I've felt afterwards that I was not really adding anything to, you know, what I was, you know, in terms of what I was writing, it seemed like it was just kind of straight journalism. And for the sake of a novel, I think you need a lot more than that. So I was casting about and I realized that I was interested in Chinese power and ascendancy and all the things that are happening in China and the Chinese character in a way, but also about American stagnation and decline. And so I had to set the story in a very different time in which that decline had kind of found its extreme expression in this very class-structured society, and that this very different society was a society that would not only welcome but really require such laborers from elsewhere, and particularly China. So I wanted to sort of bridge the two kind of stories and then, you know, both think about America as is, which again reflects my concerns, but also write a novel about community and the community of Bimor, you know, that enclave, that labor enclave that you mentioned, and talk about the ways in which it's regulated and self-regulating, ways in which, you know, there's a communal way of thinking, but also this urge to break out of it.
Could you mention a little bit more about that? How are they self-regulating?
Well, there is a authority above them called the Directorate, who shows up every once in a while, like out of bolt out of the blue, to take somebody away or change something, but change the prices of fish. But generally, though, these folks are suppressed by the bargain they've made for safety and security. They've, you know, all their lives are really just about work, sleep, and eating, and a little bit of entertainment with, you know, kind of, the usual kind of video entertainments. And they accept that because outside the walls it's dangerous. You know, it's sometimes lethal to go outside. And so I think this community has you know, sort of quiescently, you know, suppressed itself so that it doesn't look for any other destiny, any other kind of freedoms, and not just political freedom, but maybe even a freedom of imagination. And things change, of course, when one of them, this girl named Fan, decides to leave the walls of this very safe place. And that inspires and instigates a lot of self-inquiry on the part of the people of Bimor as to what they're really doing there and what they're what they really care about.
And there is the ability for, in your world, for people to actually change their social status, right? They can test into the wealthier society.
Well, they can, only a very few, though. You know, just a handful out of thousands can test in. And the spots are very few. So effectively, no, there's no mobility except for the very few. I look at that kind of satirically, of course, too, you know, about testing out and the charters are, you know, these elite people who are constantly striving to better themselves, and kind of beleaguered by all the testing that they give each other and their children, their own children. So it's also a precarious existence, but for the people of Bimor, it's really more like a dream. And so few of their number actually test out and become charters that they've actually erected a monument inside the story to them. You know, that's how few of the people are there. You know, they etch their names in stone. And one of the people who've tested out is Fan's brother, who left many years ago because he's much older than Fan and has not been seen since.
So in today's world, we have the American dreams, the thought that if you work hard and you test, you can be anything you want.
Right.
And, you know, that's not the case in your future world. Do you think it's the case here in the current world?
I think it's true that obviously you can test well and gain entrance into places that might not be available to one if you didn't. But I think maybe there's too much reliance on the idea of just merely, testing out, as it were. That there's much more to being a person and much more to citizenship than, you know, quote unquote, success. And I think that's one of the things that I want to get at about the charters, is that they have all the success, and yet they're miserable people. You know, full of neuroses, strange obsessions, strange practices, and a skewed morality. The Be More people don't have a skewed morality, but they're sort of stunted. They can see from birth to death what their destiny is going to be, and that's because of the nature of their settlement. But that has a really profound effect on their character and consciousness.
At one point in the story, Fan is called a racial epithet, which I'll paraphrase as a little New China babe. Now, Fan has only known America, and her family has been in America for so many generations that they don't identify with the country of their ancestors. But others still see them as foreigners. Right? Do you think Asian Americans will always be the perpetual immigrants in America, or is there hope in the future?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. I think gradually, you know, we Asian Americans, and by that I mean we people who look like we're of Asian descent, right? Because it's really about what people look like almost than anything else. That face, right, will be completely accepted in a way that has, you know, that no remarks need to be made, whether positive or negative. I don't know if that day will ever come, but I think, at least in our lifetime, but I think someday it might, just because of the way demographics are working these days, that there'll be more and more a society that's racially a plurality, rather than a majority and a minority. I think about, when I go to Honolulu. And we like to go to Honolulu for lots of reasons. But one of the reasons I love to go to Honolulu is that it's sort of an Asian American America. There are plenty of non-Asians there too. But Asian Americans are not only accepted, but actually are at the core of the power structure there. And so everything sort of devolves from that, you know, it makes life there very different. And the one way it makes life different for me when I go there is that no one notices me at all, whether they're Asian, whether they're Hispanic, whether they're white. It's just not remarkable. And it's a strange feeling for me, because I've always been someone, you know, I'm of a certain generation who always been quite conscious of the remarkability of race. But there it's not. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like an Asian American heaven for me. but will all of America get that way? Absolutely not. But will some pockets of it? Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Chiang Rae, the major storyline of Anna Fulci is Fan's quest to find her missing lover. And this quest is sort of told in a legendary tone. Did you take inspiration from any of the famous quest stories from literature?
Well, I, you know, of course, you know, there's Huckleberry Finn is a classic story of a kind of adventure tale, you mm-hmm. know, where he encounters all these strange folks and in places and all these little communities. And that's certainly, I think, any American adventure tale is, you know, sort of comes out of a Huckleberry Finn. So that's one of them. But no, I tried to really think about the book as... you know, in terms of describing the world in which Fan acts and reacts, I really tried to think about all the things that I was, you know, wanting to see, and not worried about, you know, what I thought the reader might want to see. I wanted to just see this, again, a world that was riven by class, really beset by worries over health, environmentally challenged, and sort of lawless. And so, you know, those are just the basic kind of things that I wanted to see in the world that I was building, and mostly because I wanted to see how the people inside those circumstances, how they would react and think of themselves.
In your novel, you choose to use a first-person narrator and alternate that with a third person and talk about Fan. Why did you choose that sort of interesting structure for narration and for telling
story? Yeah, I mean, you'll notice that it's a we narrator, mm-hmm. First-person plural.
First-person plural, right.
Instead of singular. And I started doing that right from the start because it felt both very natural to...